45 metres back. Bernard Foley's
got the legs.
It's got the legs. The distance.
Hello and welcome to Pick and Dry Rugby. We are the People's Podcast, providing a platform for rugby lovers to come together and support the game that's played in heaven. I'm your host, Mitch. Joined with me, as always, is Lockie. Lockie, how are you, mate?
Mitch, I'm well. Good to see you. I'm still licking my wounds, if I'm honest, after Friday night. Seeing the Reds go down emphatically in Hamilton was a bitter pill to swallow. But we do have some good news on the rugby front with the Brumbies going through, Mitch, and a bit of sad news with the Rebels as well.
Yeah, so it's been a big weekend of Australian rugby results. We had the quarterfinals played for Super Rugby Pacific for 2024. So we had both the Reds, the Rebels, and the Brumbies represented from Australia. We also had the Drua, if you semi-count them, as an Australian team featuring in the finals. We didn't have as many results as we probably would have liked over the weekend, but we will dive into those results very, very shortly. What I just wanted to shout out to people, it's been a while since we've promoted this, but we have a Discord server, and if you're not involved in that, I would really highly encourage you to get involved. That is a great place and a great community that we've created online to meet like-minded people from all across Australia, all across the world, really. We've got some people that are on that server based overseas but are Australian rugby fans. We've got areas of that server to talk about all the games that are happening, all the news that breaks throughout the week. If you don't have X or Facebook or any kind of social media presence to keep up to date with the rugby content news that's coming out weekly, I would highly encourage you to jump on our Discord server, because we have so many dedicated people that are happy to promote the game and to talk about all the news that's breaking, that you just, after a few clicks of your finger, you're up to date with everything that's happening and joining a really, really interesting discussion and debate that goes on there as well. So if you are interested in joining, go to our link tree on any of our social media platforms, and the link to join is there as well. I think that's kind of enough for the intro. Why don't we just dive straight into the rugby content, which was the Super Rugby Pacific quarterfinals over the weekend. And to kick things off, Lockie, we had the Queensland Reds playing the Chiefs in Hamilton on Friday night. 43-21 was the final score. Not really a flattering score for the Reds in this result.
Yeah, you said two teams were playing, but it didn't really feel like it for the first half, Mitch. The Chiefs go into the Sheds up 31-0 after laying on four tries in the opening 23 minutes. It was a blitz, and it's exactly the kind of start I think Reds fans are afraid of. You go over, you've talked yourselves up, and the Chiefs, way too strong at home. They were so physical. They were so fast. Their ruck speed was so good. And the Reds just never looked in it from there. I mean, you're never going to come back from 30 points down, traveling abroad, and you know, a couple of nice tries in the second half. Tate McDermott put his hand up and showed that he's probably the form half back in the comp, on the Australian side at least. But aside from that, not many shining lights from the Reds.
I think if there's one key takeaway from this whole round of rugby, it is that the New Zealand teams have found an extra gear in the finals. The Chiefs have taken up a step. The Blues took it up a step. The Hurricanes as well. So as unfortunate as it was for Queensland fans, for just general rugby fans, it was great to see the contest that was, or the style of rugby that the Chiefs were playing. Unfortunately, the Reds did not have the game plan to negate that in that opening half. Yeah, they came back and scored 21 points in the second half, which was awesome to see. But the fact was, at that point, the game was pretty much run and done, and it was kind of consolation points.
100%. And I got to quickly shout out one bloke who was amazing for the Chiefs. All eyes on McKenzie, but Sami Sonitakiaho at hooker is so, so strong in his carries. I think he busted the line a few times, broke five tackles. He was a wrecking ball while I was out there, and he still laid on 17 tackles as well. So he's really effective in his 50-minute stint there. And the All Black hooking race, you know, with him, with Asafa Amua, with Cody Taylor still running around, they have real, real weapons. And it's a bit of a contrast to us at the moment around that front row space.
Yeah, that was one of the takeaways across the weekend as well, was that our front row or our forward packs just did not look dominant against any of the Kiwi sides. We'll talk a little bit about it later when we get to the Brumbies game, but they struggled throughout their quarterfinal as well, which was not good to see. I guess one of the things I will say that was, I mean, this, take this with a grain of salt. You can say this is a bit of an Aussie fan that's complaining a little bit, but there's some calls by the refereeing in that first half that really made you scratch your head as a neutral fan, or as a Queensland fan, as an Aussie fan, which you thought, if this game was played anywhere else, those penalties are probably going the other way. Now, one of the opening or the second try to the Chiefs was Nawawa, the wing. Winger went over and managed to keep the ball in. From the first maybe two or three angles that they showed, it very much looked like he was on the line and went out. But they didn't go to TMO. They didn't intervene, and they played on and they scored off it. There is one angle, I will say, that does look like from behind that he did get the ball away. There's a lot of talk on X back and forth from Kiwis and Aussies saying whether he's in or out, and it wasn't looked at. But the frustrating thing is that there were opportunities, or there were occurrences made in this game where penalties were given to the Chiefs that didn't quite seem as fair because they weren't giving to the Reds the other way. The other one that really jumps out to mind was a line out halfway through the first half. Sean Stevenson comes around the back of the line out, cleans up Fraser McWright as he gets the ball, and the penalties given to the Chiefs because Fraser didn't end up releasing it in the tackle. Liam Wright, as captain, stands up and says, "Is he onside? Are you sure he's onside?" And the ref's like, "Yep, no, he's onside. It's all good." In the replay, very clearly offside. He's coming around the side of the line out while the ball has just touched Liam Wright's hand. So kind of frustrating that those things didn't even out across the game. And there were some instances later on in the other games over the weekend as well that had those games been played in Australia or at a neutral venue, you're probably not giving the penalties to New Zealanders as readily.
I think it's just the perks of a home final. You have, and you can't deny that the Chiefs had momentum, particularly through that first half as well. Maybe that aided it, but it's part of having your home crowd. It's part of earning that home final. Things are more likely to go your way. We could get into the referee chat, whether we need neutral referees back in the game. But personally, I've got a lot of time for Ben O'Keefe and a lot of time for all our referees, if we're honest. Yep. So maybe that's a chat for later on. It's tough not having the impartial, you know, the sappers to roll in.
The South African referees, yeah, exactly.
Or things anymore. It does make it difficult sometimes. But look, I don't think even, you know, scrapping those two would have changed this result. The Chiefs were a far better team. And it's an interesting position now for the Reds because they had a far better season on paper, you know, more wins, a stronger home record, a great record against the Kiwi teams through the regular season, but they still finished beaten quarterfinalists in Hamilton and by a much bigger margin than last year. So I think a lot of soul searching to go on at Ballymore over the next few weeks to figure out what went wrong before they have games against Wales and then Tonga.
And that is one thing that we will speak about in future weeks coming on the podcast as we wait for the international season to kick off, is what happens next for these Aussie sides. The Reds are probably the forefront in Australian rugby at the moment that they've organised matches for their teams to play together against quality opposition. We've got a game against Wales. They're travelling to Tonga. They're playing Samoa? Samoa or Tonga? In Samoa or Tonga? Tonga.
Definitely
playing Tonga in Tonga. And they're playing together at the end of 2024 before even 2025 starts. Whereas you've got other teams like the Brumbies, probably aren't looking too far ahead yet, but the Waratahs, definitely one area that they have not done well in the past years is having that continuity of games post the end of Super Rugby. So we can talk about that as we move on. But anything else, Lockie, you want to say just about this Reds game before we move across to the Hurricanes? All right, let's keep moving then. So the next game up on Saturday afternoon was the Hurricanes hosting the Melbourne Rebels, not the Queensland Reds, Melbourne Rebels, for their unfortunate last time ever in Super Rugby Pacific. Final score 47-20 in this one. Now, before we get too much into the game itself, one big shout out to the Melbourne Rebels. They held well and truly in this game for 45 odd minutes, and they were up and putting a lot of pressure on the Hurricanes in that first half. Really, really impressive performance from them for a team that's coming into their last ever game in Super Rugby to be up and their first ever final.
Yeah, look, 105 tackles just in the first half alone. They gave it everything, and no one can take that away from the Rebels in their first finals performance. They were so good against a side that was tipped to, you know, some people were tipping them to win by 50 or 60 points. It was, you know, crazy scenes there as the Rebels kept holding them out. And, you know, the Hurricanes dropped their fair share of ball, but that's as a result of pressure, right? The Rebels came off their line really well. They were really effective at messying the breakdown. And even though they had 30% territory and 35% possession through the first half, they still held on until overtime, Josh Morby goes over, so it's 14 points to 6 at halftime, and from there, the Hurricanes just went up another gear. And I think we knew that was probably inevitable as impartial fans to see the Canes flick a switch and really roll past Melbourne. But Mitch, we got to just pause and admire and congratulate all those Rebels fans who went across to Wellington. It was quite emotional watching them all in the stands at full time, and seeing the players as well after the final whistle blew was a pretty solemn moment, I thought.
Yeah, the way the Rebels have sort of handled this week has been, you've got to admire them for the way that the news came out last week that they're not continuing post 2024. This is their first and only appearance in a finals in Super Rugby. They're going to Wellington to play the Hurricanes at home, who have been the form team in the competition. And the way that they showed up in that first half was really commendable to the players. They put a video out on Friday night that was some messages from former players to the Rebels' current team. That was awesome little insight into the camp to see what those messages from former players were and the impact that it had on some of the players. There was a few glassy-eyed players looking at and watching those messages of support come in, which is what they needed, right? Nothing can be taken away from the fact that this was the best ever Rebels team. They have gone the furthest in the competition than any team had in the 14-year history of the club. And so as disappointing as it is to come away 20-47 as the final score, I think the players can hold their heads high that if it wasn't for that try on halftime, that they're going into the break 7-6, which is an incredible performance from them in that first 40.
Yeah, I agree. Also, where's that radar been from Carter Gordon? You know, we see him shanking him early in the season. He pops him over from 40 out near the sideline a couple of times. That was an impressive turn. Like,
I think that's what pressure brings. Finishing. Jack Strawn in the past few weeks has stood up and kicked some goals, and so Carter Gordon's like, no, mate, I can kick goals too. Just watch. Bit of pressure.
He was creaming him. He was absolutely creaming him. But, yeah, Lockie Anderson finished really well for his two tries. Valiani Ekuasi, massive impact as soon as he came on, and he'll be sorely missed. I hope he finds a home still in Super Rugby somewhere, and I hope all these players do. I mean, we saw how well they can scrap, how hard they worked for each other throughout the season, and at the end of the day, we want to see Australian rugby talent remain in Australia. So it'll be a watch this space for the Rebels. I know it's still raw. It's going to be a lot of media attention, I think, over the next month or two to see where a lot of these players end up. And I think we can probably just say we wish them all the best.
One player that does stand out, and we've spoken about him for years, Taniela Tupou. And we said earlier in the podcast that Australian teams struggled at scrum time this week. The Rebels looked far more dominant when Tupou was on the field, and they were getting penalties against the feed, which is just a credit to the style of player that he is, that he can come on and can turn games in your favour. Wherever he ends up next year, I've got everything crossed, fingers, toes, tongues, everything crossed that it's an Australian club. If we lose the talent of Taniela Tupou overseas, that's probably going to be, that's far and above losing the likes of Mark Nwongani to RC at the moment. So let's hope that we can keep him in Australian rugby. If he turns up at New South Wales, even better. Let's keep things moving while Lockie tries and recovers from that little joke. The next game of the next quarterfinal was the Blues hosting the Fijian Indrua. 36-5 was the final score in this one to the Blues. A little stat coming into this game that I saw that probably surprised me. The Blues, the Drua have never played at Eden Park in their history. They've never played a home game against the Blues in Auckland. That's incredible.
They would have been playing up. I remember they played in Northland up at Whangarei, I think earlier this year. They must have played at North Harbour last time against the Blues, or maybe it's been at Super Round. Who knows? But certainly a cauldron for the Drua to walk into. And I think this one played out pretty much as expected. The Blues too big, too disciplined around their set piece. We saw the rolling maul used to really good effect. And when you're up 22-0 at halftime, it's going to take something miraculous to drag it back. And in fairness to the Drua, we did see a miraculous try from the man out on the right wing. Celestino Ravatamunda does it himself all again, but a lone highlight in what was an otherwise blue wash.
It's unfortunate for the Drua. And looking back on their performance in 2024, it has been the narrative from the past few seasons that they play so well at home and they're one beast to contain at home, but they go away and they just can't seem to find that form. And it would have been fantastic to see this result flipped, to see how the Drua would have performed had they played at home. Now, that's saying things of, you know, you want to take away from the Blues. They earned their home quarterfinal, so no discredit to them. But imagine what this game would have been if it was played in Fiji. We're probably seeing a much tighter affair. You've got the Fijian crowd there, full house, all in song for the Drua, and you're probably looking at a much tighter score as well.
I totally agree. And the day that we see a finals match in Fiji is going to be a really good day. I can't wait to see that. And I'm pretty certain it will happen down the line. I think when you compare the likes of the Drua to Moana, if we look at our expansion teams, the Drua are far better set off and have a far stronger home record because they are attached to their place. They don't have the problems of Moana with bouncing around different home locations. So I would tip the Drua to be hosting a quarterfinal in 3 to 5 years, and I would travel for that game. That's absolutely a game I would go to. It'd be terrific. But yeah, as we said, I think the Blues were probably maybe a little frustrated at times by the Fijians' ruck discipline slowing them down. I think the Fijians were pretty happy just to play as loose and limber as possible and probably got away with a little bit around the edges. But when you've got players like Caleb Clark and Mark Talia fully on song and finishing off scoring movements, plus Ricky Riccatelli had another great game at hooker for them as well, I think the Blues were always going to have too much firepower.
So one thing, one takeaway from this game is this was Mick Byrne's last chance to coach the Drua. He now moves across and takes over the Flying Fijians. So he has been their one and only head coach in their whole history in Super Rugby Pacific the past three seasons. Glenn Jackson takes over next year as their head coach. He's been working with them as an assistant coach this year. Interesting to see now what happens there, how they improve things if they can work on that away fixture results that we've seen in the past two seasons and see if they can sort of get that up. One of the things that in the post-match interview that Mick Byrne did say was that it has taken 2 to 3 years to get this Drua team as fit as they need to be to play in Super Rugby. And that it's a thing that the conditioning to get the players ready to this level consistently across the season has taken 3 years. So he has no doubt in his mind that we're going to see a bigger and better team in 2025 and further on into the competition because they're now, as athletes, ready to play at this level, which is, I mean, that's a frightening thought when you see how big they're and strong that they can be, the style of rugby they play at home this year in 2024.
Oh, I can't wait to see the Fijians bigger, fitter, stronger, and hopefully with the inclusion of Glenn Jackson, better disciplined as well. Yeah. It seems cliche to say, and it'd be good to go through the stats so I can fully back it up, but I don't think it's a stretch to suggest that the Fijian Drua probably have worse discipline than most of the other teams in the comp. Like they're very happy to infringe. They push off the line really quickly because they want to rush attacking waves and try and shut down that second line. But it often comes at the expense of giving away cards and getting on the referee's wrong side. So having Glenn Jackson in the role who's done it all as a player, as a referee, now as a coach will be really interesting to see what he takes to it. But clearly Mick Byrne means a lot to that Drua group. And there are something like, I think, 20-plus Drua players in the initial Flying Fijian squad that Mick Byrne's named. So, you know, Mick's, you know, not out of it yet. He's going to have a fantastic career, I think, with the Fijians. And I'm really excited to see how they go internationally.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, really great to see that they're keeping some of that rugby IQ in their system and not losing that as we often do in Australia. But let's move on to the final game, which is the only positive really in a pretty bleak weekend for Australian rugby. And that is the Brumbies getting up over the Highlanders 32-16. Which sees them book a place in the semi-final next week. Now, this game was pretty topsy-turvy for a lot of it for a quarterfinal. Coming into it, a lot of people expected, and we said last week, that the Brumbies would be too much for the Highlanders. It ultimately did end up being that way, so running away with it in the end of the second half. But the scores were 16-17 at halftime to the Brumbies with a very late try to Billy Pollard to push them in front. Going into the half, it was a pretty nervy game, and you wouldn't have been too comfortable as a Brumbies fan with the style of rugby that had been played and the scoreline margin.
Yeah, I think it was always kind of the don't think about it being an upset game. that we've come to expect for the Rumbies in quarterfinals. I think because we set such a high bar for the Ponies and they have been there and done that the past 2 years, they've won tight home quarterfinals, I think, both to the Hurricanes in the past two iterations and now against the Highlanders. It's seen as that banana skin game. You know, we hope we win it. We should be winning it. But what if? And if I'm honest, I was pretty worried through that first half. We didn't quite see the Brumbies click until just before halftime. But to score that crucial try right in overtime, I think it was when Billy Pollard goes over, that's when I thought, oh, we're actually okay. We're going to be okay. The Brumbies make the most of those opportunities. And that was really, really good to see. I think just the general Australian rugby fans' anxiety about playing Kiwis always comes to the fore before halftime. So it was great to see that. And then from there, I thought it was a really clinical finish. You know, we go bang, bang with Pollard again and Muirhead goes over with the soccering try, which was just awesome. Just a great finish from Muirhead. And then Lolasio controls it from there before Debrasini ices it. I think we saw the kind of performance that makes me feel as though the Brumbies can still win finals and win ugly if they have to.
Yeah, starting off the game, that first 20 minutes was really kind of touch and go for the Brumbies. And as a fan watching this, it was kind of hard in your throat type of stuff. We have seen the Brumbies for years be dominant at set piece, and their scrum has been an area or a facet of the game where they have won multiple penalties in games and allowed that platform to shift on and to the outside backs where they've scored their points. But in that first 20 minutes, they were getting towed at every single breakdown, every single scrum. They were getting penalties against the feed. They were getting penalties for their own feed. It was just crazy that they just didn't seem to be able to stay up and hold a scrum in that first opening 20 minutes. And that really, I think, was starting to seep into the mentality of the players. They were getting frustrated. You could see after maybe the third or fourth scrum penalty, Alan Alatoa stands up and just absolutely gives it to Angus Gardner. He's just filthy, some dirty words picked up on the sideline mic. But you could just tell that they were frustrated. Their game wasn't getting into motion because they weren't getting the go forward and the ascendancy at the set piece that they have come to expect earlier in the season.
And that's crazy as well when you think about who would usually be there, like your James Slipper anchoring it down. Such a massive loss. And I think it's just as much about the perception of Harry Vela being there as it is his experience and his skill set. So, you know, Ethan De Groot starts going to work. The Highlanders really, really putting that squeeze on. And you've got to give it to Jermaine Ainslie, who's no slouch as well. Isn't he a Wallaby cap? Like he's
Australian born.
Born. I'm almost certain he was in the system or had a cap or two. So, you know, there was really quality front row. And to concede five scrum penalties is a serious smack in the face to the pride of players like Billy Pollard and Alan Alatoa, who are, you know, test match quality, test match veterans in the case of Alan. So, yeah, understandable that we can see him blowing up, but it really makes me concerned heading up against the Blues, who have that really tight set piece that's been working well. I don't think the Brumbies are immediate write-off up front. You know, Slipper coming back is a big inclusion. Harry Vela is a young prop with plenty to learn. And I thought Reece Van Neck did a great job in securing the scrum when he came on a bit later. But to cop that five scrum penalties, I'd be licking my lips if I was a Blues forwards coach and going, we know exactly where we're going to target them and roll on from there.
If there's one key takeaway that the Brumbies could take from some of the other finals that played over the weekend, it would be the Rebels game. One of the things that the Rebels did really well was that they didn't allow the game to descend to a set piece. Like there wasn't a lot of drop ball. So the first scrum in that game happened something late into the 30s. Like it was very close to halftime. It was really late in that first half that they went to their first scrum. So what the Rebels were doing was keeping that ball moving and keeping that continuity going. Whether they had the ball or the Hurricanes did, there just wasn't the opportunity to go to set piece. And what the Brumbies conversely did was that when they went to set piece early, they gave away one or two penalties, and then the Highlanders knew that that was an area of the game that they could target, and so they did. And the Brumbies allowed the Highlanders back into the game through repeated infringements at the breakdown or at the set piece. And so next week, moving to the Blues and moving into Auckland, which we'll talk about in a moment, I think if they can keep the ball moving and try and keep it away from set piece as much as possible, that might be a way to sort of negate that effect.
Yeah, and when we say set piece in this case, I think we specifically mean scrum, right? Because the Brumbies line out was tight They won 17 from 18. Billy Pollard was throwing darts all day. Darcy Swain, really, really disruptive. He won 10 of his own, but he was great at forcing errors on the other side as well. And Charlie Cowell continues to be an impressive sort of second fiddle with Tom Hooper and Nick Frost as well, also in the mix. So when we're saying set piece, I think in this regard, definitely scrum. We're not bagging the
problem. We mean scrum, yes, definitely.
As a whistle. That was clean as a whistle and great to see. We do need to talk about some of the Brumbies players in this regard, though. We saw Andy Muirhead's getting a lot of plaudits for two really well-taken tries, a bit of footwork there. But we can't talk about this game without talking about Bob Valentini, who was pretty much the man taking ACT on his back and saying, follow me, boys, let's go. The Big Bobby finishes up with 18 carries for just two tackle busts. He makes 11 of his 12 tackles, but he also gets over the ball three times in a fetcher role. And he was everywhere in the park. He led the line speed. He put his hand up for all the tough carries. He even threw a couple of line outs, had a bit of fun with it on the quick ball. Like, he was everywhere. And he's the kind of player that makes me think, actually, the Brumbies can go over to the Blues at Eden Park and they can beat them man for man, because he's currently one of the form back rowers in world rugby, I'd say.
Another player that really impressed me was Jerome Brown at seven. Now, while he didn't have the amount of carries that Bobby did across the game, he made a far, far more meters, 54 meters he made with ball in hand. He had 9 runs, but the Highlanders just kept kicking to him from dropouts, from those 22 clearances. They kept kicking to him and he just wind up and just hit that line at speed. It was pretty impressive to watch.
It was great. He's got a huge motor. And I think we've mentioned him a couple of times the past few weeks, but another bloke whose star really starting to rise this year. Charlie Cale had another great game as well. I think all the Piggies really put their hands up and said, follow me. Luke Reimer continues to be a really strong finisher for them. Always makes his tackles. I thought Harrison Goddard at halfback coming on again had another positive impact. And having players like Jack Debrasini to ice it is a luxury as well. So we're seeing the Brumbies' depth come to the fore there. And it makes me excited, because we're in a similar position to the past few years now where the Brumbies are carrying Australian fans' hopes at Super Rugby level. We're back in New Zealand watching them go at it. I mean, do we believe? Do we dare to believe that the Brumbies can do it this year?
Do we dare to dream? That's a great segue. Let's move into our previews for the semi-finals that's coming up this weekend. So the first one does feature the Brumbies, the men from the ACT. They, on Friday night, go to Auckland to play the Blues. Now, there's been a lot of talk around the structure of the finals this year and the fact that the Chiefs, who played on Friday, get to play on Saturday in the finals, in the semi-finals. So they get a 7-day turnaround. And the Brumbies, who finished higher on the table than the Chiefs, played on Saturday and they go to their semi-final on Friday. So they've got a 6-day turnaround. Now, say what you will around travel and the amount of time between those two games, it doesn't really feel fair for a team that finishes higher on the table to have a 6-day turnaround coming into a pretty crucial semi-final.
It doesn't seem fair, but it's also not about the teams ranked third and fourth, right? It's about finishing 1 and 2. So the Hurricanes finish first, therefore they get the luxury of having the extra day resting, and the Chiefs are the beneficiary of that by qualifying. It's a tough nut to crack, but yeah, I think they're focused on preferencing 1 and 2, so making sure that the minor premier gets the extra day, or the top rank gets the extra day, and Brumbies just have to cop it in this regard. I don't necessarily think it's the worst thing. Lots is made about load and turnaround, and I'm the last person who's going to endorse anything that rugby league does, but you consistently see players who play club, origin, and club again and back up, and that's 3 or 4 day turnaround. And I think that's fantastic. So, yeah, 6 day turnaround, I think you're just going to have to cop it in this regard. And maybe it gives the Brumbies a bit of an advantage. I'm not sure whether they head home. I mean, obviously they're based home, but do you head over early? Do you set yourselves up in Auckland and just use it as a training base? I'm really interested to see how they tackle this week coming up. And
there was an interview post game with Stephen Larkham, and he mentioned something around they'll train on Monday, which normally they give the players Monday off on a Saturday game day. or they just use it as an analysis preview type day. But they'll actually train on Monday, and then they fly over on Tuesday afternoon. So they'll train on Tuesday morning on paddock, and then they'll fly over on Tuesday afternoon. So I guess Tuesday night, they'll arrive in New Zealand local time, and then they'll have Wednesday, Thursday, and into the game on Friday. So not really the most ideal prep when you factor in the fact that you've got to travel over to New Zealand either. But, I mean, you do what you have to do, right?
Look, they're paid to play footy. They're paid to be professionals, and I'm sure that they'll be in the best nick possible. No, seriously. And, you know, it's exciting. I really like the idea of us going over to Auckland. And, you know, maybe the crowd's not so big. Maybe it's, the Blues are just going to cruise in. You know, it's just the Brumbies, don't worry about it. But, you know, lots of these boys were there when the Blues, you know, won it very controversially and late in 2022. You know, was that penalty supposed to be called? Probably. Was Offatonga Fasi offside for the charge down on the drop goal? Almost definitely. So I reckon the Brumbies have a real point to prove. And there's something in the waters for this, Mitch. I'm very quietly... very quietly optimistic about the Brumbies' chances.
I think we need 100% confirmation at this point. We're not really yet. It's Monday afternoon when we're recording this, so we don't have the confirmation yet. But if they can get James Slipper back for this semi-final, that'll go a long way to getting them ahead in terms of their scrum. One area that they did struggle this week against the Highlanders was that scrum that they did get penalised a few times and weren't able to set that platform to work off, that we know they have used that as their sort of key game driver earlier in this year. So if they can get Slipper back, then I'm pretty confident they can match this Blues scrum. Patrick Tuipulotu, the captain of Auckland Blues, got an injury last week, broke his arm, I think it was, or leg or something, but he's out for 6 to 7 weeks. So he will not be featuring for the Blues for the season. Whether that changes anything in terms of leadership, well, it will change leadership, but whether that changes anything in terms of how they play, if that sort of opens a crack for the Brumbies to exploit, that'll be really interesting to see.
Well, it certainly helps them at line-out time, right? Like Tuipulotu's been one of the standout players in my book across Super Rugby. And when you look at the Blues roster, he's the only outstanding lock in my book for their team. So does leave a big hole. Line out time, you know, can they exploit it? We've got Nick Frost, Tom Hooper. I'm saying we a lot now because we're on that Brumbies bandwagon, right? So it's all
we're talking about
here.
Wallabies now. Yeah. It's just Australian rugby. We're all Brumbies fans.
But Patrick Tuipulotu, you know, anchors that down, but he was off after 20 minutes. So players like Josh Beer, James Thompson, you know, they're not household names. It does leave a big gap. And I think that is an area that could really impact this game. If we take over at line-out time, maybe that gives as good as they get at scrum time, right? So there's a bit of parity that's found there. I'm really interested to see how the matchups out wide go. Now you've got two smaller wingers in Corey Tall and Andy Muirhead coming up against two of the most physical and dominant front ball wingers in Clark and Talia. So that's just massively exciting as a fan. And then, you know, how does someone like Tom Wright hold up in a semi-final cold? And we saw a couple of, you know, balls out the back early against the Highlanders that didn't work, but then he settled in and was really effective later in the game. So there's great matchups across the park in this one. And while we haven't seen the team list, we can anticipate that there's going to be a fair few Wallaby Bolters coming up against a fair few established All Blacks, and that is exciting.
I also wonder, just looking at the preparation or the lead-up into the games, into this game this week, whether the Blues playing the Drua last week, and no disrespect to the Drua, it wasn't really a challenge for the Blues. They weren't challenged in that game. They came away with it 36-5, and the Drua only scored that one try, which was pretty opportunistic and a single player sort of exceeding and doing what he needs to do. So I wonder if the fact that the Brumbies had to work for 50-odd minutes against the Highlanders to really secure that semi-final berth probably puts them a little bit ahead in terms of preparation, that they did have a much harder, more physical game against the Highlanders than potentially the Blues did against the Drua. Not sure. Just something to think about.
Oh, it could be, but I think you're still saying that Brumbies are outsiders, right? The hoodoo is now out to 0-18 with the Reds and the Rebels going down. So that's 0-18 games that the Aussie Super Sides have played in a New Zealand final. It's a crazy record, and Brumbies are now the only ones that can stop it this year. So super excited for that one. But Canes and Chiefs again on the Saturday afternoon, Mitch, is going to be one hell of a game too.
Oh, really, really. I mean, again, we said it earlier in the year when they played that this is a flip of the coin. At semi-final time, I mean, it's do or die now. This is the last chance that you get. If you win this, you're through to the grand final. If the Hurricanes... Did the Blues finish first or second?
Blues finished second. So there's still a chance the Brumbies can host a final. So go Chiefs.
That's true. So if the Hurricanes win this, they can get a home final. If the Chiefs win this, depending on the other game, they might be travelling to Canberra. So there's a lot to play for in this one. And again, it's a flip of a coin, really, how this one goes.
So give us your tips. Give us your semi-final tips. First Blues v Brumbies and then Canes Chiefs. Who have you got?
Controversially, I really need to see who's refereeing both games. And that's not to say individually that one referee is better than another, but I do think that if you have an Australian referee refereeing that Blues and Brumbies game, it's a much tighter game and there's potentially penalties called or not called either way being played at Eden Park. So that's important. I think Angus Gardner definitely features this week, but whether he gets the Hurricanes and Chiefs game or he goes over and refs the Brumbies again, I'd love to see him ref the Brumbies as an Australian fan because I think he handled that game pretty well last week and he's refed really well this season. But most likely you're probably seeing Ben O'Keefe in the Blues game and Angus Gardner in the Hurricanes game, which then goes into what we were talking about before, 2022, the non-call last two opportunities late in the game. If Angus Gardner's there, I think it takes away that kind of, just that conversation, right?
Oh, it might take it away for us, but imagine the Kiwis if Angus Gardner's there and the Brumbies win in Eden Park and Buster, you know, 27-year hoodoo. It's all the referee in that case. I don't think we can win in that referee side of things, but I need a tip. Referee regardless. Go on, you got to hit me with it.
Heart says Brumbies, head says Blues, and my head says Hurricanes.
Blues Hurricanes final. I detest that you sensibly picked that. So I'm going to say Brumbies and Chiefs, and we're going to see a grand final in Canberra. What a win that would be for Aussie rugby, and what a turnaround after a couple of years of so close to the Brumbies to see them upset the Blues and get a home final against the Chiefs, who they have a great rivalry with. I think that is best case scenario.
Best case for Australian rugby. Whether it's realistic and is going to happen, that's another question entirely.
Hey.
Now, before we finish the podcast tonight, there's one question I've got for you, Lockie, and that is just looking at the finals this week or this year, last few seasons of Super Rugby Pacific, we have seen the top eight make it through. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think we have ever seen a home team lose a semi or a quarterfinal. The way that the competition structure works is the home team generally gets rewarded and wins in finals time. If we, and Super Rugby, the format is changing next year. We are down to 11 teams. We don't know yet officially what the finals format would look like. But if you were at Sansar or whatever this Super Rugby Pacific panel board is, if you were the head of that and you had free reign to make any decisions or changes to the finals format, what would you do and why?
That's a damn good question. The well, you're right. No one's won a quarter or semi away. I think the Crusaders won both their grand finals away in the past 2 years. First one
in Auckland, I think they won one of them.
So, I mean, that's just Crusaders under Razor, though. So maybe it doesn't count as much. But yeah, the finals format's interesting, and I don't think anyone's expecting to see top eight from 11 teams. That would be shambolic. And really, it would be really damaging. I think it would be really damaging to rugby's public image, which needs all the help it can get heading into a Lions year and an expected windfall of $100 million from that. So we really need to start pushing some good news. And I think it lends itself to a top six. I know Sydney Morning Herald reported last week that sources, well-informed sources under the condition of anonymity, all that stuff, they've said that, yep, it's going to be top six, with first and second having the week off and three paying six and four playing five in essentially what is a qualifying final. And that actually harks back to the old Super 15 conference system where the top four or the top three winners of each of the conferences were skipped through. And then you had three beneath them or the lowest ranked hosted a qualifying final, however that looked. I think that's the most sensible way to go, a top six. I think to go straight to a top four would be damaging with teams like the Force, Moana, the Crusaders, who are just struggling so much at the moment, and And the Tars, you know, teams that aren't going as well, I think it's still important to keep finals prospects alive. So to go from a top eight to a top four would see people lose interest as well, because it effectively becomes maybe there's six teams that can qualify for that top four. So top six is good for the narrative, and I think that's going to be how it looks across a 19-week season. So teams will get two buys each and play top six from there. But would you change your top six? Does top four work for you? What do you reckon?
I think looking at the results this week, all credit to the Reds, the Rebels, the Drua, and the Highlanders, they didn't really throw up much of an opposition to any of the top four. So, geez, top four for me is probably where it needs to be. Whether you go top six and give, like you said, the first one and two a week off and get them playing in last round could be where we look at. But, yeah, I think at the moment it's not quite – there's a gap, and there has been for the last few years a gap from four to eight. And these semifinals and quarterfinals generally aren't as competitive as we would have liked. Away from the structure, though, is there any changes you'd like to see in maybe anything else that you could think of that would make these finals a little bit more competitive?
I like the final system in the sense that we go close to a home and away season and then straight in. I don't think we need to change the structure of if you host. The perk is that you host, and if you lose, you lose. The only variations I could see would be if you did a top four system where one played two straight away for grand final hosting rights and three played four as a knockout, and you sort of go from there. But I think that cheapens the product in the sense that you only have one game in the second week of finals. So you'd lose a bit of momentum that way. It's all about trying to, you know, capture interest in a really competitive market, right? So I'd like to see more finals, but competitive finals. And that's why I'm interested in a top six. If the competition shifts around the new broadcast deal in a couple of years, if we were to go down to 10, I would be advocating very strongly for a top four, because again, having more teams in the finals and out rubs me the wrong way. So I'd be pushing for a top four if it's just 10 teams, but six into 12, which is, I think, where most people want the competition to end up back as. However that looks, I think that's a good way to go.
Now, an idea that I was thinking about whilst watching this Brumbies game, and there's probably a little bit more thought that needs to go into this, but there are strict rules currently around Super Rugby finals that you need to play a certain number of games for your team throughout the season to qualify for finals. And that's to stop players or teams like the Blues or the Hurricanes bringing in an Artie Surveyor or a Bowden Barrett from Japan right before the finals kick off. One thing that I was thinking about, though, was changing the eligibility laws, not so much so that it's just free and open for everyone, but if a situation arises like we saw this week with the Brumbies, with James Slipper not available, Harry Vela comes into the starting side and he does his best, right? But he's the reason that they're getting penalised at the scrum. Now, if you've got a team like the Rebels, say, or in this situation, the Rebels did make finals, but in a situation, say, where the Tars didn't this season, but maybe the Reds didn't in another season or the Rebels didn't in another season, you've got a Wallabies prop who's playing for another, like Angus Bell, for example. Could you parachute Angus Bell into the Brumbies to play quarterfinals? How exciting would that be? Likewise, say there's fullback goes down injured in the week of. Yes, there's another guy that comes into the side and potentially misses out on an opportunity. But if you shoehorn in someone like Andrew Kellaway to play fullback for the Brumbies, does that not then just ignite two different teams of supporters to go for that one side?
Oh, like a finals wild card.
Yeah.
It'd be, I like the idea in theory. I don't think it could work for a number of reasons. Namely, players cracking the stands that someone gets parachuted in ahead of them. But for argument's sake, let's keep it going. It's fun, right? It's a quirky thing that you could do, especially for bringing international players back. Imagine if the Rebels somehow miraculously got past the Canes, they're still kicking in a semi-final, and Marika Karabedi comes knocking on the door and jumps on the Sting. Like, there's I like it in theory. I can't say it'll ever be realised,
no.
But it's that kind of sideways thinking that we need. Bring the ideas.
It's just the thought of what can we do as Australians, how can we make our teams more competitive against New Zealand? Because we get into the finals and we get pants every year, and we've got one team in the semis this week. How good would it be to see a Rebels team or a Reds team win their quarterfinal and then push quite far into a semi?
It'd be great.
Along with the Brumbies.
But the Reds and the Rebels, right, they're responsible for finishing as low as they did. Like, the Rebels dropped six in a row before going into a quarter. They had an opportunity to be top four, and they were found wanting. You know, despite all the adversity, they were in a position to push for a top four spot, and they didn't hold on to it. Same with the Reds. You know, you can I blew enough smoke up them this year because I'm a fan, but ultimately they lost to the Force. They lost to Moana. Yeah, then they almost lost to the Tars last round, and they had a bunch of other tight losses. So they still weren't ready to win a quarterfinal. When the Reds earn the right for a home quarterfinal, when Aussie teams earn a home quarterfinal, then they deserve to progress, right? They deserve to have that advantage. Yeah. And I think it was a good reality check for Reds around expectations this year, I think.
Yeah, that's right. I'm just thinking of ways that we can try and keep the product a little bit more interesting for Australian fans once we get to finals and it's all
Sevens wild card. Take your sevens players outside of an Olympic year. Something fun.
Something like that. Yeah, exactly. Anyway, let's leave things there. That brings us to the end of the podcast. Thanks, Lockie, for joining me this week. Let's all get on the Brumbies this week. Let's cheer them home against the Blues and hopefully things go their way and we can get a home grand final next week in Canberra. If that does happen, everyone just get to Canberra. It's not that cold. Get there, support the Brumbies against whoever it ends up being in that situation, will be the Chiefs. But all the best to the Brumbies. Let's get an Australian team into that final next week.
Let's do it. Let's say it. Everyone's a Brumbies fan this week. If you're not, get over yourself. We need Aussie success and we're going to manifest it. Mitch, thank you. Thank you to everyone who's listening, and we'll be back in your ears next week.
We'll see you then, team. Bye.
Bye.